Welcome once again, folks, to All Things Trek, not on Riser Radio anymore. We did have an unfortunate circumstance happen, which we're not clear on all the details.
No,
really.
But something happened, and now Riser Radio doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, which is kind of sad. I missed some of the program we had going on there, specifically us being live. But we will, at some point, be live again. I am working on trying to get a Shoutcast server running on our web server that our website's running on. I'm not clear on all the specifics on how to do that yet, but rest assured, I'll get it figured out in one way or another, or it just won't happen. We are still available on iTunes. You can still totally download us on the website. We're still totally there. We're just not live right now. So,
and rest assured that I will not stop yelling at Bob until we are live again.
Yeah, I've received a lot of abuse since I got back from Ren Faire.
Yeah, you were neglecting your duties to the future of Star Trek by going and living in the past. You weren't even dressed as a Starfleet officer. I'm ashamed.
Well, I was dressed as a Templar Knight, thank you very much, which I've got some pictures of.
Which is really cool. Hopefully we'll get to see those pictures at some point.
I bought a sword and everything. I got some bracers for free.
It's a rad sword. It's a Viking arming sword?
That's what the guy had told me that I bought it from, and then what they told me back in our little campsite, because we camped there over the weekend, they were telling me, oh man, it's a sweet Viking arming sword. It's like, what's an arming sword? Which I really actually don't know what an arming sword is to this day, but
they've got them in Mountain Blade. They're pretty sweet one-handed swords.
Yeah, I know they got them in Mountain Blade, but I don't actually know if the function is supposed to be like a cavalry type blade, or if it's just supposed to be a small light blade or whatever.
I mean,
so
it's straight. Most cavalry blades are curved.
Well,
just as a rule.
It's a Viking arming sword. A Viking weapons are straight.
Yeah.
So all we right. Our email has changed as well, once again.
Even
we were just functioning off the Riser Radio one, we're actually back to the Hotmail one. So
yeah.
allthingstrek@hotmail.com is where we'll be receiving our email at.
We still can't bring ourselves to switch over to Google for some reason. No Gmail.
With the Gmail. I feel Gmail or Google in itself, their empire is already big enough.
Yeah,
so,
but I mean, it's big for a reason.
It is big for a reason, it's true, because a lot of people use it. Just like MSN was back in the day, but now it's kind of a thing to where Google's like the invader.
Yeah,
invading MSN's homeland.
I mean, I'm not crazy about Google, but they do provide a superior product.
Yeah.
Like,
we're just talking email client here, I mean.
Yeah. Okay, so anyway, what are we talking about today, Star Trek related?
Time travel.
Ooh, time travel. See, I'm excited for time travel, because I think this is like going to be the one subject where Bob's hatred is going to outweigh mine.
Oh, man.
And I think I'm going to be the one being like, no, Bob, we got to calm down. We got to be reasonable about this. And I'm excited for this
events.
Role.
I'm actually, before we get into time travel, though, I'm actually itching to know how last week went while I was at the Ren Faire with Elliot.
Well, last week went...
Well, I wasn't with Elliot, but you were here with Elliot
talking about
stuff.
And it went pretty great, as anyone who's listened to Tales from the DMZ knows. Elliot has a really great voice, and he's a huge Star Trek fan. And we talked about some of the more philosophical aspects of the Borg.
Philosophy.
And how,
Borg.
Like, they were originally kind of a communist
metaphor.
Like, parallel and metaphor, and how they changed over the series, and how we really liked them at first, and then how they got kind of damaged and maybe not ruined, but at least made less cool by Voyager and the introduction of the Borg Queen, which is actually from First Contact, but Voyager really ran with it beyond all reason. So, you know, we talked about, and we had a lot of fun talking about the Borg. It kind of got a little bit weird at the end because I was trying to deal with tech stuff while I was talking. So for anyone who listens to the recording of that and wonders why the ending is a little spotty, that's why.
Speaking of recordings and such, I have been wholly neglectful of actually putting that stuff up on the website and iTunes.
This is true.
Mostly because I got the job at Privateer Press.
Right, which is, it's really rad to be working with Bob. He's a cool guy.
I try. Yeah, anyway. To time travel. We're traveling in time.
Yeah. So we have...
So I hate time travel.
Well, okay, tell me why you hate time travel.
Because it's not space, the Final Frontier.
It's time.
It's time.
More Final Frontier.
I really just dislike a lot of time travel episodes. There's only one episode that we're going to be discussing later that I actually like, and I'll mention it when we get to it.
All right.
That I thought did it all right. But I feel that time travel is such a cop-out type story to deal with in Star Trek, because there's already so much more stuff you could be doing or talking about. Or rather, there's other aspects of Star Trek that I would rather see on the screen than seeing a time travel episode, especially the ones that go in the past.
Yeah.
Because I could really care less about the ones in the past.
I don't care about the past, none.
I don't care about the past. And even Star Trek's past, I could care less about. I'd love to see a show done about some of Star Trek's past. Like, you want to see, for instance, one that takes place between Kirk's era and Picard's era there. That like
I do, really.
Pretty much like 2300 to 2350
mm-hmm.
right there.
Yeah.
I'd love to see a show there as well. You know, I'd like to see that kind of happen myself. But anyway, what's the first bit for time travel we get going on?
So there's a couple of ways you can do time travel, and like I can understand your point about it not wanting to go to the past all the time. And sometimes it's a budget issue. Like, sometimes it's just cheaper to do a time travel episode that goes into the past so we can use regular sets we can shoot on location instead of having to, instead of having to build a bunch of sets. Like, it's not a coincidence that the first big Voyager time travel episode takes place in Hollywood, effectively. Seriously. I don't remember. I have that episode written down. We'll talk about that more later. But there's a reason for that. It's because it's way cheaper.
Rad.
But there are some things that are good you can do with time travel. Like, time travel, assuming you use it sparingly, you can use it to put the crew in a situation that they would not normally ever face. And you can see, and that's all about, like, you know, there's a lot of different plots where that's all about, is putting the crew in a strange situation and seeing what they do. And time travel is an effective tool for that. And you can also use time travel as a more direct means of social commentary instead of having to put in some weird analogy that doesn't always turn out the way you want. You can use time travel to just directly portray difficult situations. And again, I'm not a huge fan of the way Star Trek does time travel most of the time, and I feel like they overuse it. Not as much as they overuse the holodeck for their period pieces. But they do overuse it to an extent.
Holodeck time travel story would be one I wouldn't mind seeing.
Holodeck time travel. I mean, they kind of do that with, like, Janeway's governess program, which I think we talked about.
Governess program?
I think we talked about this in, like, our very first episode, which, I mean, we're on episode 9, wow. But anyway, no, during the first couple seasons, this is before Fairhaven, although this was also the closest thing that early season Voyager had to a continuous story. Janeway had this weird, program going where she was a governess of, like, some Victorian, I think, era kids. I couldn't really tell. It was, like, generic old-timey England. It was, like, had this story where, like, she was, like, sort of a romance interest for the father, and the mother was dead, and it was supposed to have, like, a ghost story element to it or something.
So
it was supposed to be a mystery.
So the story was then about her hanging out in the holodeck being a governess, is what it was.
And then it kind of culminated in this episode where, I forget exactly what the premise was, and I don't even remember which episode it is, but it's like, Janeway starts to go crazy, and, like, she sees things from the holodeck coming out and trying to attack her, and, like, this is also one of the first episodes.
While she's in the rest of the shit?
Yeah. This is also one of the first episodes where, like, Kes's psychic powers really manifest a bunch. I don't remember exactly what the name, what was going on in that episode, because I didn't really look it up. We should probably close that door.
We should close that door.
This is our fault for trying to record stuff with the door open, because it's kind of, it's not even really warm today, but I was just lazy.
Well, refreshing breeze.
Yeah. But anyway, so we're a little off topic here.
Time travel. Yeah. Janeway governess.
Another important tenet of time travel is that it should always be some kind of freak accident or something that you can't control. Because if the characters can travel through time using their own volition, it creates a really weird thing of, why don't they do that all the time? Especially considering how time... like, and you don't even have to use it to go back, like, 3 years, like, you know, a century. Use it to go back a day and undo that mistake you just made.
Yeah, especially, and I agree, especially on this point, that it has to be kind of like a freak accident of some sort.
Exactly. Especially when you get into things like the Dominion War. Sci-Fi Debris brought this up originally, was like, you know, all of these battles the Federation is losing, why don't you travel back in time and fix some of those, and, like, not have those battles
just go not make it happen.
Yeah, just be like, no, we're not going to fight this battle, we're going to fight it differently. Or any number of things. And once you introduce time travel into the mix, it's sort of like, well, it kind of invalidates a lot of story.
What problem cannot be fixed through time travel?
Exactly.
Purposeful time travel.
And it's also, I think it would be best to, something you have to remember is you have to pick, a way that time travel is going to work. Because obviously we don't have any idea how time travel would really work.
So no, I read an article about actually time travel, and scientists are saying it's not actually possible.
Well, yeah. At all. I mean, that's, like, a lot of it has to do, I'm a little fuzzy on this point, but as I understand it, it has to do with our misconception of time, and, like, we sort of tend to think of time as, like, a linear line that we can, with the proper technology, we could reverse and go back to an earlier point in that line. Mm-hmm. But, like, that's just an artificial construct of our own, like, of our own making, and it's not really how time works, it's just how we perceive it. And it's not really this single entity that you can travel along. But that's going into, like, some seriously complicated physics that I'm not prepared
to. But we're
to.
Star Trek fans. We're supposed to be, like, into complicated physics and stuff.
Yeah, but that doesn't really hold with the way Star Trek views time.
That's true.
Star Trek treats time as a line that you can travel back and forth on. So one of the important things you need to figure out is...
Or do some crazy Back to the Future type nonsense in the new movie.
Yeah, well, there's that too. I actually
forgot. There's tangent timeline, you see, that's been created with... We have Biff Cone.
Yeah, alternate timeline. I didn't really... That scene in the new movie really bothers me. Not because I'm upset with the alternate timeline. I'm fine with that. I just don't understand why that scene had to be so long and why they had to state it so blatantly in a way that didn't really make sense in character. And it was just like a mess. Like, it would have... It was almost like Spock made like a Shakespearean aside to the audience, explaining what was going on. And it's like, you know, it made me feel like you think I'm kind of dumb. Like, I understand this. You don't have to spell it out for me like that. But anyway, so you sort of have to decide how your time travel is going to work and stick with it.
Absolutely.
And I'm kind of annoyed by how Star Trek sometimes does the predestination idea of everything has happened, so it will happen again. And the idea being that you can't actually change anything with time travel, because anything you do with time travel has already happened.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes they go with the, you can change things, and it's sometimes they do it, like, they switch in between in, like, the same episode. And then, of course, the another important thing to be good at time travel is that the story has to really make use of the time travel, because time travel is a huge element. And there are certain episodes where they do, and certain ones where they don't.
Yep.
And, of course, bad time travel. There are a lot of things that make bad time travel. First of all, you shouldn't do it at the drop of a hat. You should do it. You should space them out, because it gets old hat really quickly.
Yep.
If you just are always time traveling. And then, of course, you know, we already said it has to be a freak accident. And it's also, like, very often you want them to be kind of isolated time travel incidents. Because if you try to work time travel into a bigger story, like, the longer your time travel arc goes for, the less sense it's going to make. And Enterprise does this during the Temporal Cold War, and it just, that's a nice sound that Bob is making there. I feel a need to protect my throat. But anyway, so we'll get to that in a little bit. So then we get to the original series, which as a whole, I felt actually did time travel pretty well. And like one of the first instances, if not the first instance, was Tomorrow is Yesterday, which is an episode where they start off okay with the Enterprise being thrown back in time by, like, a freak accident involving, like, a black hole. And that's the one where they are, like, hovering in the sky over the United States, and the Air Force sends up a plane to see what's up with them. And they end up having...
strange cigar-tubed craft in the air.
And I would think that in real life, if something the size of the Enterprise was just hovering above... Because the Enterprise is huge by our standards. I would think they would send up more than one plane...
Really? You think so? It's 400 meters long. That's an aircraft carrier.
Yeah, but can you imagine an aircraft carrier floating in the sky?
Well, floating in the sky, no.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if something like that showed up and was floating in the sky, I think you'd send up more than one plane.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, or at least shoot at it anyway.
I mean, I don't know.
That was the initial reaction of back in 42, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
This is during World War II.
Yeah.
There was, off the coast of California, a UFO appeared of some sort, and this general or colonel, or whatever, there was some guy in charge over on the West Coast, obviously, because they're doing wartime here.
Right.
That he ordered all main, like, AA batteries, like, point at this thing, whatever it was, and shoot at it.
Well, really?
Yeah. Just, like, a few thousand rounds just went into this thing, whatever it was. They didn't bring it down, whatever it was, this UFO, but it got shot up. And supposedly, like, wreckage and debris was falling from the sky.
Huh. Probably a Zeppelin or something.
Like Zeppelin.
I mean, I don't know if I would immediately shoot at it, especially during peacetime, because you don't know what it is, and you don't know if you want to anger it.
Yeah, I mean, this is during wartime is what I was talking about, so.
And so anyway, they go back to the 60s, and, like, they have some cool discussions with the pilot that they beam up, and they have...
Because they try to tractor beam his plane and crumple it up.
Right, which I thought was pretty cool. I mean, you know, it's like, oh, okay, we'll use this tractor beam. Oh, wait, these planes are made out of paper. Maybe we shouldn't have done that.
Whoops.
And also, this was another episode where they established that nuclear bombs are pretty powerful, even by space standards, because they were like, you know, our ship is pretty badly damaged. If he hits us with a nuclear bomb, we might actually, you know, be in some trouble. Which is another reason why I find Enterprise's spatial torpedo so hilarious.
Now, do they have ICBM technology in the 60s?
Not ICBMs, but like...
Or I guess in the... When Star Trek was going?
Well, yeah, definitely.
Okay.
But more importantly, they technically had nuclear missiles that you
could... Of course they did. Cuban Missile Crisis was like 4 years earlier. My bad.
So, you know, that's why I find Enterprise's spatial torpedoes to be so hilarious, is that, like, they've established that nukes are not, like, a super weapon in starships, but are at least dangerous enough to warrant some consideration. So it seems like Enterprise would just be better off if they put a bunch of nuclear missiles on it. but, so that episode is alright. It gets a little goofy towards the end with, like, Kirk and Sulu getting captured twice by some Air Force MPs. And then, of course, the way they get back is by reverse engineering, is by, like, doing intentional time travel, which is a no-no. Because then it's like, wait, so you know how to time travel, why don't you do that all the time?
Why don't you guys do that when you first got here? I don't understand.
Like, the really good time travel episode of the original series is The City on the Edge of Forever, which is time travel using, like, a bizarre alien artifact they can never use again.
The Guardian of Forever.
Yeah. And it's one of the best episodes of TNG in general, and it really...
TOS,
excuse me. Did I say TNG?
You did.
Oh, most pro. And it's really interesting because you have... Even though the explanation for how McCoy accidentally went back through time is kind of silly, because he, like, drugged himself by accident.
Yeah, what did he bring on the bridge? Because I remember the episode, he had a hypo of something.
He was, like, Sulu was having some kind of attack, and he was going to drug Sulu to sedate him or something, but he, like, drugged himself and had the opposite effect.
Well, it's because the ship rocked or something and got himself in the gut.
Right, and then somehow he managed to break into the transporter room and transport down to the planet.
I'm going down to the planet surface.
Which is like, wait, what? How did he even do that? I mean, but anyway, so that aside, they play against all your expectations, because it's like, you know, first of all, the traditional time travel story where someone goes back in time and changes something, it's usually by, like, doing something bad, like by killing someone or breaking something or disrupting events that way. But McCoy does the opposite. He saves someone, and that completely screws up history, and, like, in a really bad way. And you have Edith Keeler is the woman's name who he saves, and she's this big anti-war
peace
proponent. She's like a very influential social worker, and she's just all in general a really good person. And she has this kind of weird goofy speech where she talks about how she hopes that one day she basically predicts the Federation in this speech. And it's kind of a weird
all men will come together in peaceful exploration and other scientific goals.
And it's like, lady, have you been watching Star Trek? I feel like that's what's been going on.
I feel like this is a thing.
But anyway, that speech aside, she's clearly a very intelligent person. She has really great ideas. And at first I was worried that, like, this episode was saying that it's dumb to be anti-war, because it's like her death, like, her surviving causes the United States not to enter World War II, which causes, you know, the Nazis to win. You know, that's a questionable outcome if you really study World War II, but I'll buy it for the purposes of this episode. But the episode's not actually saying that her views are bad or silly. It's just that they're in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Uh-huh.
And it's clear that Kirk really admires her for her views, and that they are very similar. They line up with the views of the Federation, which was what makes it so great, and it really plays against your expectations for what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so the time travel is really the focus of the story, as opposed to just being a device to get you somewhere, which it will be in certain other not-as-good episodes.
Yep.
And so that episode, and then, of course, it's just really very well crafted in a lot of ways. So that
the episode would go on to win some nominations of some sort. It was hailed as something.
It's one of the most critically acclaimed original series episodes, and I don't know if it actually won any awards, but it was definitely nominated.
Not
for
the Wikipedia some. That when we get off.
Yeah, definitely. And then on the other side of the scale, you have Assignment Earth.
No man, Doctor Who.
Yeah, which is like a bizarre Star Trek Doctor Who crossover, because, like, first of all, they just go back in time just randomly. Like, they purposely go back in time to study Earth during the 60s for some reason.
Yeah, they're on a historical mission.
Right, and they run into this guy who is, like, this like, suave dude in a suit who, like, travels through time and fixes problems. And he has, like, a cat that turns into a Playboy model. I don't remember her name, but, like...
Well, the dude was Gary Seven. I think mm-hmm. the cat's name was Isis.
Yeah.
I think.
But when she turns into a person, she was a famous Playboy model.
Yep.
I don't remember who that person's name was.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, that episode is really silly because he really seems like Doctor Who. That's what he seems like. I think he even has a Doctor Who-style tool that's like almost a sonic screwdriver.
Yeah. Was Doctor Who going on at this time as well?
Yeah, it was.
In the UK? Yeah. Mm-hmm. This was the 60s.
Yeah. And of course, you know, Kirk and Spock spend almost the entire episode chasing this guy around, not really doing anything.
Yep.
And of course, the actual explanation is even funnier. This episode was supposed to be the pilot for a new show that Gene Roddenberry wanted to do. but of course, it wasn't very well received, and the network saw it and were like, really? You want to turn this into a show? and so they cut that. So instead, we just have this bizarre little episode where, like, Kirk and Spock are basically guest stars.
Yep.
And it's really weird, and it breaks all the rules of time travel, and is just in general a very silly episode.
I appreciate it for being as silly as it was. I didn't like the episode myself either, but I appreciate it for being so silly.
It is definitely one of the sillier episodes, and it's kind of fun to watch. I mean, just because it's so goofy.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get into the TNG era, and TNG didn't have a lot of straight up time travel. TNG had a lot of time travel ish episodes. Put some air quotes around that.
Yep.
You had Time Squared and Cause and Effect.
Time Squared. That was the first one?
Yeah, well, that was one of the first ones. That was the one with the...
Chronologically, if we're going through the seasons of TNG, that's the first time travel episode that we encounter in TNG, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. So, I really, 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 really hated this one. The only thing I liked out of this episode was the special effect of the Enterprise going through that strange wormhole-looking thing.
Yeah, the space tunnel?
The only part of the episode I appreciate in any way at all.
All right, tell us why you didn't like this episode, Bob.
Because it was suddenly, with no explanation, we have Second Picard hanging out in our shuttlecraft, tumbling through space. And oh man, all his biofunctions are stupid crazy, and we can't interface with the shuttlecraft because all this shit's like phased backwards and crap. We're going to swear now, by the way.
Yeah, we can totally swear now. Probably still not going to, because I think it's cool to have... I think that could be our thing. That could be a thing that we do, is we don't swear, because all the other reviewers all swear like crazy, because that could be our niche. I don't know. Just something to make us sound different.
I'm going to live to sabotage you, then.
All right, fair enough. Yeah, the idea of all...
As we got closer to the event point is going on, all of Second Picard's functions were coming back, and all of a sudden he's like this fixated Picard that has to like make sure he gets in the shuttlecraft and stuff to repeat the whole cycle over again. It's just, there was no real good explanation for why this thing was happening.
It was just a thing that was happening. The hilarious idea of being like, all right, so everything that is like reversed with him, like giving him the wake up pills, just put him further to sleep.
Yeah,
which brings up the amazing idea of like, well, okay. So why don't we just knock him out? That'll totally wake him up, right?
Because Pulaski doesn't think that way.
Or like punch him in the face to fix his problems.
Yeah. And by the way, for all you people out there, Pulaski heals through sadness.
Oh right, yeah, she totally does. We found that out watching Shades of Grey, yep. Which is the clip show episode at the end of season 2, where she has to heal Riker of his parasite by giving him sad memories.
Yep.
But like.
Or anger.
Time Squared and Cause and Effect are sort of two takes on the same thing. And Cause and Effect is the one where they're constantly repeating the same set of events.
Yeah, I thought that was better explained, though.
Yeah, well, that was much better executed. First of all, because we actually got to see the repeated events,
yep,
instead of it just being, you know, the episode promised us this had happened before.
Yep.
And we just had to take the episode's word for it. You know, we got to see the characters as they went through each cycle with slightly different information than before, and it was interesting, and it was cool, and it had a lot more drama, because we had already seen the Enterprise explode once, so it could easily happen again.
Yep.
And, you know, in the end, their solution to it is a little wonky, because...
Decompress the main shuttle bay.
Well, no, that was fine. It was mainly, it was, like, the number 3, and I, like...
Oh,
I,
yeah, where they have they send that, like,
yeah,
subspace thing.
Yeah, they send that information back as, like, the number 3. And it was, like, I seem to recall, like, thinking at the time, that's a really random piece of information. And they're incredibly lucky that that Data put that together. Because he also has 3
in
pips.
In the 11th hour with the nerd solution.
His thing is, he's like, the number 3 might have referred to the number of pips on Riker's uniform. It's like, Data, you also have 3 pips on your uniform.
2.5.
I guess, if you count one with his half. But it would have, I think, made it... Could he not have sent the word Riker back? I mean, could he only send three? Could he only send numbers?
Yeah, Riker probably could have made sense as well. I mean, they had, like, a limited amount of bandwidth or something like that to, you know...
limited time.
They were on Comcast cable at the time, you know, trying to travel through time with that, so...
Yeah. And so after... And, like, Cause and Effect is a little bit of a jump forward, but I wanted to talk about them both at the same time, because they're sort of differently executed ways of doing the same thing.
Yeah, I definitely like Cause and Effect more because of the fact that the crew has figured out what is going on.
Yeah.
And explains that to the audience. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, with Times Square, it's just like, this thing happened. Okay, what happened exactly? And then suddenly the Enterprise just explodes, right? Because you could see it, mm-hmm. happening on the, I think it was the shuttle.
Yeah, on the shuttlecraft's like, record.
They explode because it's just some random energy discharge thing. It was just like, oh, that's no good, but how's the time thing? Okay, all right.
What?
All right, it's happening. I guess I'm going with it.
Yeah, man. So then we got to Yesterday's Enterprise.
Now this is my favorite.
I love Yesterday's Enterprise. I cannot express how much I like Yesterday's Enterprise. Yesterday's Enterprise is actually an interesting story because it was the... When Michael Piller took over as the head writer, he decided to open up TNG to unsolicited scripts. He basically let it be known that anyone who had an idea for a Star Trek script could send in their idea.
Mm-hmm.
And so someone sent in, like, this very, very rough version of a script, which Michael Piller looked at and thought it had some promise. And, like, there are so many people who worked on that script. Like, the wall of text... of writers' credits is huge, and it's one of the few wall of text episodes that's actually good, because they went through it, they refined it, they took out everything that didn't work, and they just made it really cool. And you know, and it's one of the few episodes that actually, it's like an episode that features someone time traveling to them.
Yep.
And it like gave us a bit of an explanation on the Federation Klingon Alliance, which was really cool, and it presented this very interesting moral dilemma of, do we send the Enterprise C back, even though we know they'll be destroyed for the greater good.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it showed us Captain Garrett, who was, of course, the only woman to ever command an Enterprise.
Badass woman,
yeah,
Captain.
I love Captain Garrett.
I want to be on my ship, like, doing stuff. No, no, you gotta lay here and be a better. No, I gotta be on my ship.
I also like how she was... she was pretty quick on the uptake. She was like, wait, this is not a starbase. Your sick bay is not real. What's going on here?
What is this? What's happening?
You guys are all wearing wrong uniforms. And it was also an episode where we got to see Tasha Yar in a not-first-season role, and she was actually fairly, you know, she was cool. She wasn't overacting to everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, it had a really cool battle sequence, although it was the first episode that introduced the giant birds of prey, which
Kavort.
Yeah, I'm not terribly fond of that. It was like, alright, we need more types of Klingon ships, but we only have two models. I guess we better just...
Let's prop the bird of prey's wings up.
we'll call it
the Kavort.
We'll say it's bigger.
Yeah.
but, you know, that battle sequence is really cool, and it showed... It was also one of the instances... I really like how in that episode the Federation is losing the war with the Klingons,
mm-hmm.
And it created this really neat sense of desperation, and the ambassador to me just looks really cool.
Yep.
Everything about that episode is rad.
Yep.
And it follows all the right rules of time travel.
Yep.
So Yesterday's Enterprise, A++.
I definitely appreciate it because of the fact it does show us, for as far as time travel goes, one, because it was an accident,
mm-hmm.
that
yeah.
the Enterprise C suddenly it was, oh man, we're forward in time now. We're not fighting Romulan warbirds or earlier versions of that around Narendra 3,
mm-hmm.
right? And we actually see things change in the present.
Exactly.
That's what I really loved about the episode, is that it was a time travel episode where there were actually immediate ramifications on screen that I could see happening right then and there.
Right.
As opposed to, which we were actually kind of talking about this a little earlier before the show, time doesn't necessarily travel in, like, a straight line,
mm-hmm.
how we perceive time and such, but, you know, if little things happen here on the timeline and such, there are other things that will be happening, you know?
Exactly.
And that's what I really appreciate about this episode. It's like, oh man, this little thing was out of whack, and now everything is different.
Everything has changed. Worf's not here.
You call it the butterfly effect, right?
I don't actually know if that's the butterfly effect, because the butterfly effect is, like, a seemingly inconsequential event can make huge changes. I'd say the Enterprise C not being there at the Battle of Narendra 3, was that it?
Yep.
I'd say that's not a small event. I'd say that's a pretty big event.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still, you know, it's a cause and effect. And it
right,
should...
but in, like, the Prime Universe, we don't actually know what the ramifications are for the Enterprise C having been destroyed by Romulans.
Right.
But we get that explanation through them not having been there at that point, with Data making the conjecture that, I mean, this Federation starship went and defended this Klingon outpost, which the Klingons thought was honorable.
Right.
I mean, we never hear that bit of detail in the Prime universe. It's just like, oh man, Enterprise C destroyed defending Klingon,
We didn't even know about that in the Prime universe. Yesterday's Enterprise is the first thing we'd ever heard of the Enterprise C.
Yep.
It was just like, for that matter, we didn't even know about the Enterprise B yet, because generations
No, we happened. Didn't. We didn't get Captain Harriman yet.
So we only knew about the A, and then suddenly the D, and it was like, what happened?
Suddenly the D happened.
We're missing two letters here.
Yep.
And then we found out about one letter of the Enterprise C. I just love the story of the Enterprise C. And I've said this before, I'll say it again, I really want a show about the Enterprise C. It would be so cool, because it would be so different from the other Star Trek series, because it would be like the story of a doomed ship, and that's really cool. I really like that idea.
How many years did the Enterprise C serve?
I think three.
Really? That was it?
Well, I mean, according to certain non-canon sources...
I thought it was like 12.
Well, there's a novel that claims that it was 12, but like that novel is about as canon as my script that I wrote. I got the impression it wasn't supposed to be that long, because like the Enterprise typically doesn't, like, you know, the Enterprise doesn't seem to serve that long, and like... It just seems like it seems unlikely to me that I got the impression that they hadn't been in space that long. Like maybe I'm wrong, but it seemed like it was kind of short.
I just thought it had served longer.
I mean, maybe I don't know. I don't think there's ever a canon. There's not a canon source for that because Star Trek novels aren't canon.
Maybe I'll go ask the lore guardian over at CBS or something.
I guess.
I wonder if we can get in contact with him.
Maybe you can. I didn't even know he existed until just now.
Oh yeah, there's this guy that I think he works for CBS right now because the IP, at least as far as the TV show goes, CBS is in control of the IP right now.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just a guy who is, and Cryptic Studios actually liaisons with this guy to get like all the details right in Star Trek Online.
Really?
Yeah. So they liaison with this guy who is like the guardian of like, you know, the lore for Star Trek.
Fascinating.
I mean, I heard about him because I was listening to another podcast I listened to called Starbase UGC, which is all about fiddling with the Foundry tools, and they were talking about this guy, and I looked him up. It's like, oh, this is an actual dude. How do I get his job?
Fascinating. I would totally have that guy's job.
Yep.
And so anyway, the time travel of the story in yesterday's Enterprise is worked directly into the dilemma. It's just a great explanation. And so after that, we have a matter of time, which is much less serious, but I really like it. It's the one where that really annoying guy shows up in a time pod and is like, hey dudes, I'm from the future, I'm here to observe you.
Yep.
And I love that because that guy is running such a smokescreen.
I know.
And he's so there to he's so making fun of the traditional, like, non-interfering observer from the future. He's like, no, I'm actually here to steal your stuff. I'm actually from the past.
Yep.
And the only thing about that episode that I'm not crazy about is he's kind of obvious about it. Like, I can kind of see through him pretty quick.
You say these words as if you're here to do this thing, but you're not really here to do this thing.
No, I'm not actually doing that. And that's also an episode where Picard sort of makes a stand that, like, you know, non-interference isn't an excuse to sacrifice millions of lives, which I feel is a valuable stance, and I wish they'd taken more of a lesson from that in later episodes.
Well, they only did right then and there because it was serving Picard's purposes.
Yeah. So after that, we have Time's Arrow, which is one of the only, like, serious, full back-to-the-past time travel episodes that TNG did. And that's the one where they, like, it starts off with them finding Data's head in an archaeological dig.
Uh-huh.
And then they go back in time and find out some aliens are feeding on humans at the turn of the 20th century, in the late
1800s. I really feel about this episode that if they'd worked the Davidian angle differently, it would have been better.
Say what now?
Well, because those were what the aliens were called, Davidians, right?
The Davidians. Yeah. I forgot about that.
Yeah, so they're called Davidians, and their whole thing was that they were going back in the past, in Earth's past, to feed on their neural energy. And where it all pretty much kind of falls apart is in the second part of that, that was the end of season 5 to season 6, right?
Yeah.
At the first episode of season 6, Picard's talking to one of the Davidians in the cave, and asks, you know, like, why are you doing this? He's like, oh, we need your energy. It's like, well, can we find a substitute? It's like, no, there is none. So that makes me wonder, what on earth were Davidians feeding on before, and what led them to suddenly going back into Earth's past to when there were times of, like, plagues and mass murder and all this stuff to feed on human energy?
Yeah.
This is where the entire episode fell apart for me, when that happen, because it's just like, there is no other substitute. It's like, whoa, okay, how do we get the technology then for you to travel in time, to not sustain yourselves? It just fell apart for me right then and there.
See, for me, the thing that felt that like kind of ruined the episode was sort of that it was a predestination episode, which means that things are always...
Because Data's head was in there.
Yeah, which means that everything's always going to turn out that way, and it sort of indicates that it doesn't really matter what the characters did, because no matter what they did, things were going to turn out that way because it had already happened.
Right.
And to me, that kind of ruined a little bit of the drama, which, granted, you didn't find out until the end, but it, like, retroactively made me not as pleased with it.
Yeah, I wasn't really all that happy about that aspect of it. Not as much as about the Davidian aspect,
though. One thing that I did really like about that episode was the portrayal of Mark Twain.
Because
in that episode, Mark Twain is a badass. and he's like, no, you guys are from the future, and people are jerks, so it stands to reason that people will
all the books I've read have shown me that everyone in the future is a jerk. And they're here to cause no good.
No good. And he's... Like, you know, it's like, you know, people, he's employing the, I forget, like, even recently, Stephen Hawking said that, like, chances are, if advanced aliens show up, it won't be a friendly meeting, it'll be like, you know, it'll be like the Europeans and the Indians. And he was employing that logic, and he was like, you guys are here to cause trouble. and it was, like, you know, I just really like that portrayal of Mark Twain.
Uh-huh. Actor did a fantastic job. I really wanted to see more of him, and I was kind of rooting for him. At the end, even though I knew it wasn't going to happen, I was really rooting for him to stay on the Enterprise.
Yeah.
To hang out.
Make him a permanent member of the crew.
Heck yeah, I totally love that Mark Twain guy just running around in the future.
Anyway, so that was my favorite part of the episode. I also liked the parts where it was just Data and Guinan in the past. Once the rest of the crew showed up, it was a little bit crowded, I think.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the crew spent a lot of time not really doing anything. Like, they had that really big, like...
Riker palm strike the police officer.
He did.
I like that part.
Like, they had that part where they talked their way out of paying rent, and I was like, why is this taking up so much screen time? Like, I don't actually care how they talk their way out of paying rent.
Yeah.
This is not something that I'm interested in.
I think that was just more or less to give a perspective on how they would be dealing with, which they did deal with it, these people from the future where there is no concept of money, or, well, there's still concepts of money, but they don't use money actively to try to get by in a world that is so ingrained in the idea of trading, like, you know,
now, cash for services. I forget. Did they know what time period they were going back to?
Initially?
Yeah.
I don't believe so.
Okay. Because
they all went in with their uniforms on.
Right. Because there have been a couple of instances where they have known what time period they were going back to, and it's like, why didn't you just replicate a bunch of currency? I mean, I guess technically...
Well, no, I suppose they might have had some idea, given that they dated Data's head.
Yeah.
Back on the Enterprise. I mean, so they might have had some idea,
but
I mean, that doesn't...
But...
but they wouldn't have had, I suppose, a really good idea of when it would be, because they were using some fuzzy math, I felt, when they were dating his head anyway. So, because they're saying this is about from, like, the 19th century or so, is what this head was from, because it was, you know, so many years old.
Right.
But Data could easily have been, you know, sent to, like, the 16th century and just hung out and, like, you know... on Earth, you know, for the next 200 years.
Yeah, exactly.
Or 300 years or so.
And so, like, that episode, it does, like, a fair job. Like, the time travel is a freak accident, or at least something they can't repeat because of the aliens. But, as you pointed out, the time travel isn't really tied into a very good dilemma with the story.
It isn't.
There's this really obvious way out. And again, for me, it's all predestination, which I'm not terribly fond of. It did explain why Guinan, like, knows Picard, which is something I always wanted to know.
Yep.
So that was kind of cool. But overall, I'd say it's not a terribly strong time
travel. If it had been redone to be a Guinan, like, origin story, that would have been really cool.
Yeah, if it had been more about Guinan.
Like, just get rid of the Davidians. I felt the Davidians were a really stupid thing to put in there, to begin with, how they were structured.
Yeah.
Because they had to feed on human neural energy. It's just like, okay, it's like, how did they get to the thing, and what were they doing before?
What did they eat before humans?
Yeah, it's like, seriously, was there just a native, like, population of humans you were hanging out with before? Were you raising them like cattle? Like, what were you doing?
And that's something I'd like to know the answer to. But after Time's Era, we have Tapestry, which is like a time travel-ish episode.
Yeah,
like,
I don't
Picard...
know if it's actually time travel or not, though.
I mean, it's like Picard reliving his past. But I really love Tapestry. And, like, you know, big surprise, everyone loves Tapestry. But it's a really good episode, and it uses what might or might not be time travel in a way to really let us get to know about Picard. And I also really liked how it had that neat tie-in back to, like, an episode that otherwise wasn't very good. I don't remember the name of it.
What was the episode about?
The one where Picard has to go back and get his heart replaced again. and he mentions that when he gets stabbed by Nausicaans, he remembers laughing. And, like, in Tapestry, we get to see... It was the one with the pack lids.
Samaritan Snare.
Yeah, that one. And in that episode, Picard...
As soon as you mentioned pack lids, I was over it.
That's the one where Picard... They first introduced the fact that Picard has a fake heart and... Or a mechanical heart, excuse me. And
the Jarvis Mark 25.
Explains about the Nausicaans. And I like how they linked back into... In Tapestry, we found out why he was laughing. And it was this really neat... And, you know, it showed... It showed, like, not how, like, not necessarily, like, sometimes Tapestry gets, like, some criticism because it's, like, they some people see it as like, I don't know, as, like, supporting the view that, like, violence is the correct solution. And like, because the episode, like, when Picard chooses not to engage the Nausicaans in a fight, he ends up being...
I think that's a really direct judgment on people that would judge it that way. I feel. Because the episode was more about you need to take more risk in your life rather than play it safe all the time. Because people that play it safe all the time don't get noticed and then don't get to live their lives.
Yeah.
Is really what the message I felt for the episode was trying to say. Because, mm-hmm. you know, like as we saw with as the episode went on, that if Picard had in fact not faced those Nausicaans and just played it safe for the rest of his life or so, he was just like a lieutenant junior grade, like... astrophysics department officer running reports back and forth.
Right, exactly.
You know? And on the Enterprise still, which is another slap in the face, I felt, but, you know.
Still on the Enterprise.
Apparently, still on the Enterprise.
Somehow Riker had command of the Enterprise in that story.
He did not have command of the Enterprise. He was first officer still.
Did we ever see who the captain was? There was
Captain Hathaway or something like that.
Huh.
I felt.
But I don't think we ever saw him.
We know we never saw him or anything like that, because they didn't want to hire a guest actor for 5 minutes of screen time.
That's fair. It would have been funny if it was just Q.
Captain Q. I could dig that.
If John Delancey also played the captain. Because they're already hiring him for that guest role.
Yeah. So I don't know if I could really qualify this episode as time travel, though. I mean, obviously we were going to Picard's past.
Mm-hmm.
And we were messing around with stuff there. But the sheer presence of Q makes me feel more like that the episode was more about Q and his, you know, plaything or his pet or however you want to phrase it with Picard.
Right.
Because, you know, he's pretty enamored with Picard, you know, straight up from the first episode. You know, well, it's like, oh man, Picard, ooh. True.
Excuse me, I'm going to write some Q Picard fanfiction.
Yeah, so I think Q created his own pocket dimension.
Yeah.
And set up his little playland with
Picard's consciousness. And he does at the very beginning of the episode promise straight up that this won't have any effect on the timeline beyond Picard's life.
Mm-hmm.
Because Picard, you know, at the very beginning, he's like, no, Q, I won't change anything. I'm not going to change history. And Q's like, that's not the point of this game.
So, I mean, I understand how it could be perceived as time travel, because, I mean, like, we are going back
into Picard's past. It's listed as a time travel on Wikipedia, okay? What do you want from me?
Well, Wikipedia can just go somewhere else.
Yeah.
Stupid Wikipedia.
There have been a couple other episodes that I disqualified, because they're not really time travel episodes. They involve, like, time distortion or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of the same thing with the next episode, which is All Good Things, which is only kind of a time travel episode.
This is Q kind of messing with him
again. Yeah, again, this is when he's shifting between time periods.
Mm-hmm.
So it's only kind of a time travel episode. It's a good episode. It's the last episode of TNG, and they did very well, I think.
Yep. David Carson, also the same guy who directed Generations.
Really?
Yep.
Ew, why?
I feel like I've blown your world again.
The Federal Reserve is not a public entity. Okay, sorry. That was
for all those that don't know, the Federal Reserve is not a government agency.
Yeah, that blew my mind. but now apparently the guy who directed All Good Things is the same guy who directed Generations. Of course, it's the same writers too, so that doesn't terribly surprise me. But anyway, Generations, blech. but All Good Things is like, it's a good episode, but again, it's not really a time travel episode because it's like, it's more about Picard's perception than it is about actually moving back and forth in time.
Right.
Although, I mean, it does have it is technically a time travel episode. It just doesn't have the same, like, it's pretty clear that no matter what Picard does, it isn't going to change history in the other two timelines.
Those are the perceived stakes anyway, and that things will just collapse and not happen.
Right.
Anymore, because then this stupid anomaly is, you know, stupid huge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the further back in the past you go, which, I mean, paradoxical thing, which is that's what Q was trying to get him to see, is like, this is a paradox, by the way. Hey,
right.
Paradox.
Hey,
how are you going to fix the paradox? Is the paradox happening?
Right, which I thought was cool. So I like the ending message of the episode was that, like, you really have to be able to expand your perception,
mm-hmm.
which I thought was cool. But it's Yeah, I'm going to leave it alone on this for now, since I'm not, again, I'm not sure if it technically qualifies as a time travel episode.
I think it was more Q setting up that pocket dimension, because the show, that episode in particular ended on the note that the trial never ends. And that's what the start of the series was all about. It's like, hey, you're on trial, by the way, buddy. Mm-hmm. And it's just supposed to be this very large, overarching metaphor, I felt, for how one was supposed to live their life is by challenging themselves and, you know, pushing those limits and those boundaries even further each and every day, mm-hmm. which is how it was. And Q definitely gave Picard, gave me the sense that, you know, despite the trial never ending, the verdict for humanity was that they were going to be allowed to live.
Yeah, like, exactly.
You know, because they do keep expanding and pushing those boundaries out mm-hmm. in however limited fashion it may be, as Q describes it.
Although I think like the trial metaphor is a little bit misplaced, because it seems pretty unlikely, like, unless the Q for some reason picked humanity, there are a lot of other alien races you would think they would have just said, no, you aren't allowed, because you're clearly really destructive and bad.
Well, it's because the Q are looking at how humanity is evolving next to other races and yeah. such. Because, I mean, I read a lot of books anyway in regards to this, so I don't know if it's going to be considered canon or not, but... Or, well, I suppose we get this sense from Enterprise, actually, so we can actually go back to Enterprise. With Enterprise, we have humanity in 2151, right?
Yeah, something like that.
In 2150, going out into space in a true exploration manner. Like, they have their first, like, warp 4 ship that's going out, it's going to start looking at stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And there's a whole bunch of other alien races that have already had, like, warp 4 tech or better for a long, long time.
Warp 5, actually.
Warp 5 tech or whatever. They're going faster than the Enterprise. And they're running around already shooting each other, causing wars, just having, you know, a grand old time already out in the galaxy.
Yeah.
Now, look where, you know, Earth has come from 2150 to, oh man, where are we now in the Trek timeline? I'm going to say 2380, because that's where we saw Nemesis. 2387, because the new movie had the Hobo Star explode in 2387. So from 2150
to... The Hobo Star?
Hobo System Star, excuse me. To 2387, look how far humanity has come. Mm-hmm. You know, they are in charge of the Federation, more or less, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
You know, the headquarters on Earth, so is Starfleet. Starfleet's on Earth as well. They are more or less liked by a lot of people, and most of the alien powers that they fought, you know, like the Dominion, for instance, which is a huge thing in the Gamma Quadrant,
yeah.
they've defeated, you know, despite the fact that they had Jesus Sisko on their side.
Oh boy, Jesus Sisko.
Yeah, so, I mean... They have had all these things happen to them, and yet they continue to prevail, you know, because they got the writers on the side, for one.
Yeah.
But they're advancing so far and so fast, so quickly, that the Q, I think, have looked at them and said, oh man, they are on track to evolving faster than all these other guys and reach our potential a lot faster. And well, these are our projections of it. And we even have kind of a subtle Q drop-in in Enterprise, actually, where...
Enterprise doesn't do anything subtly, Bob.
Well, you remember that episode where it initially starts out with Reed and Mayweather playing chess?
Yeah.
And they're both possessed by aliens?
Yes.
Or initially I thought it was the Organians, but I think it's the Q, actually, that possessed them.
Really? Yeah. I remember that episode. I don't remember...
They call themselves Organians, I'm sorry. But anyway, they blatantly say these Organians are possessing them, that you guys are evolving really fast.
I always sort of assumed that the Organians were just the Q, like, in a different hat. I mean...
Yeah, I mean, they're both, you know, pretty omnipotent-type beings, anyway. They can just create stuff, you know, like that. Like, they had the whole illusion on that one planet the Organians did, where it was a medieval society, but it wasn't medieval. And,
exactly.
Like, where was the Prime Directive during that episode?
I don't even know.
Anyway, so it's... This hint is dropped in that episode that you guys are going to be... You know, humanity is going to be a great thing, you know, mm-hmm. in short order. And they even say that first contact procedures will be initiated in the next 2,000 years. Which, I mean, for them, they say short order. So, I mean, 2,000 years, I guess, would be a very short period to evolve from where they are now in 2150 to 2,000 years later in 4,150.
Yeah, but to being, for a Q, that's
you know,
nothing.
Like a sort of Q individual. Well, right, exactly. For Q, that's nothing. So, I mean, that's why so much attention, I think, is given to humanity from the Q, as we see in the first episode of Encounter at Farpoint in TNG, saying, you guys are on trial right now. Because they wouldn't want a species that is, in fact, into all the things that we're into, which are like, you know, war, territoriality, political conquest, these things like that, being omnipotent super beings. Mm-hmm. Right, because that's just going to destroy the universe.
Right, so I guess that makes sense why, like, only humanity is on trial.
Right, because no one else, or maybe others have, we just haven't seen them on screen.
Right.
But for as far as what we see on screen, humanity is definitely being put on sort of trial, because, I mean, if the Q are going to, I mean, because Q haven't really come up against in a against actual challenge except themselves.
Yeah, exactly. Obviously,
the Q Civil War. I mean, if there are suddenly...
Let's not talk about the Q Civil War here.
Well, if there are suddenly to come up against another power that could actually challenge them,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that'd be disastrous for, like, the universe, right? And the Q, right. I think, have a vested interest in seeing the universe not be destroyed, because they exist in the universe still.
Yeah, they do.
You know, it's still their own pocket dimension, but still in this universe.
You still gotta live here, man.
Yeah, so that's what I feel the whole deal is with Q putting humanity on trial and saying, either you're going to be as awesome as we think you're gonna be, or we're gonna stamp you out.
So. Well, that's a lot deeper than I usually get to on my my thinkings about the Q trial. But anyway, let's move on to Deep Space Nine. Let's get back to time travel.
Dodge that bullet, huh?
Yeah.
See how it is.
So now we're in Deep Space Nine, and even though I really like Deep Space Nine, I think it's the best of the Star Trek series. It doesn't get a great time travel grade from me.
They didn't have much time travel to begin with.
No, they didn't. But I think more
they had a lot of dimensional crossover.
Yes, they did. We can talk about the alternate universe some other time. Suffice it to say, I'm not a big fan of it. But the first real DS9 time travel, I think, is Past Tense, which is the episode where some weird thing happens and it's like a freak accident that causes Sisko and Bashir and Dax to go back.
They were
to
around Earth and there was just a transporter accident of some sort where there was like a subspace
wave thing
came by.
Yeah.
Because you see the satellites were in orbit and they were looking at each other too funny, and then the sun flared up and then the subspace eddies shoved the light ship into the thing.
Subspace gremlin is what it was.
Yep.
But anyway, so they, like, go back in time, and they have a neat little thing about how, like, you know, they have a nice little social commentary episode, because they go back in time to this period where, like, if you're poor or a criminal of any kind, or, you know, basically if you break, like, you know, friggin', like, loitering laws, you get put in these, like, walled-off ghettos.
Yes.
Like, literally, that is the crime that Sisko and Bashir commit.
No, it wasn't because there was loitering, so they didn't have a proper identification.
Right, exactly.
Like, let's see your papers was, I think, the first thing that the security guy said to him. Yeah. You know, or first it was like, move along or something like that. But anyway, the guards came along and were like, hey, let's see your papers. And it's like,
what now?
Papers? What?
But the weird thing about that episode is that for some reason they go back in time, but then like back in the future, it takes like 15 minutes for the timeline to change. Because like the timeline changed... Which is
weird,
because, like, the timeline shouldn't have changed at all, because, like, the whole episode of that, everything that Sisko and Bashir are doing is all self-contained. Like,
right.
They go back in time, they get Bell killed, which in turn causes the future to change, but then Sisko takes Bell's place, which fixes the future, but this all happens before the future, so... Like, first of all, why does it take 15 minutes to kick in? And then why does it kick in at all? Because...
Yeah, because we're already in the future looking
like,
at this
the
thing.
The only reason this would have made any kind of sense is if them fixing the timeline had been dependent on, like, O'Brien and Kira coming back to fix them. I mean, to save them, which it wasn't. They did all of that independently, and then they got saved. And so it's like, you know, that part is just like, what? What? Why?
Yeah.
No one thought this through.
I didn't really like that... this particular time travel set of episodes either because of that point as well, you know, because we wouldn't have seen anything anyway. I mean, it was just an attempt to show the viewers that, yeah, what's happening in the past is having an effect on the future, but when you know, think a little more critically about it, it shouldn't have had any effect anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, if anything, if you wanted to see the effect of what was happening in the future, this is literally what the shot would have been. It would have been them going back, and then you switch back to Earth in the future, and then just no Defiance hanging out there at all.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That would have literally been the shot. Right there.
Exactly.
Or what would have been cooler? Like,
yeah.
check this out.
Yeah, okay.
All right, check me on this. We have that happen, right? Them going back. Sisko and Bashir in the past.
Yeah.
And suddenly things change. We fast forward to the future to a different, totally different universal setup here. Right? Where we have maybe a different Federation or something else is in its place. And the entire galaxy is different, like we see in the crossover universe, right?
Yeah.
Something like that would have been, I think, a way better way to do it. Because
mm-hmm.
then the audience still would have seen an impact of Sisko and Bashir going back in time, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And we definitely still would have seen the impact in the future. as opposed to going, oh man, Defiant's there hanging out on Earth. Oh man, I can't talk to anybody now.
For some reason, the Defiant was protected from the temporal change. It's probably without a blade of armor. That armor is probably full of chronotons.
A blade of armor.
Yeah, whatever.
Something, I don't know.
The Defiant is one of the only Starfleet ships that isn't full of windows. Like, maybe we shouldn't put...
They're on the underside.
Are they?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know where the nacelles sit?
Yeah.
There's like this hollow underneath it, where the shuttle pod bay thingamajig is. Huh. There's some windows in there.
Yeah, all right.
That's it.
Well, anyways, fortunately in space, no one ever attacks you from below, right?
Well, you need to play more Bridge Commander.
I did like the... I liked the social message of that episode, because it was all about not disenfranchising people who get shafted already by society. And I feel like that's a lesson we could do to learn. I feel like we have some problems with that going on right now. I'm not going to get it into specifics.
Things are becoming more real than you think.
Yeah.
I mean, I know Congress has been talking a little bit about turning large, like, ghost town areas into just giant prison areas to just release people into.
Oh man, Escape from New York.
I know, right?
Okay, so after that, we have The Visitor, which is an episode where, like Bashir dies, actually, not Bashir, Sisko dies, and, like, Jake spends, like, his entire life trying to get him back, because he's, like, trapped on this, like, weird time loop.
Mm-hmm. This is my second favorite time travel episode, actually.
Really?
Yep.
See, we see this all in flashback form, and I like it, I really like the development. What I don't like is how, at the end, everything resets, and it's like it all never happened.
Well, the thing is that actually was explained in a way that made sense, I felt. That's why I like it, because there was the fictional science fiction, if you will, to back it up.
See, and I'm okay with that part. What annoys me is that we got to see all this character development for Jake, but then because he reset all of that, none of that ever happened. And so Jake's character was back at square one, and it made me kind of feel like watching that episode was a waste of time. Because it was like, everything else in Deep Space Nine is so connected in terms of character development.
In actuality, nothing really occurred or happened from that episode that had an impact on the rest of the show.
And
except Sisko had full knowledge of what had happened. At least for the moments that he was being pulled through time and meeting Sisko for those brief 5 minutes.
But the thing about it is that doesn't really change Sisko's character at all, because Sisko already loves his son more than anything else in the world.
Yeah, I mean, but now he knows his son loves him more than anything else in the world.
He already knows that.
He does not.
I mean, there wasn't, like, it's like Sisko and Jake have a great relationship. That episode didn't change anything.
They had a good relationship. It just strengthened the relationship more.
I guess.
Is what it did. I mean, we see them, you know, getting along pretty well through the series, but this, I felt, was the first episode that truly solidified that bond beyond anything else and put to rest that, Jake's behind his dad 100%, no matter what, and Sisko knows that.
All right. I can maybe buy that. Maybe. I'm still not crazy about that.
I mean, that's why the episode's one of my favorites, because it really solidifies that bond between Jake and Sisko.
Okay. All right, that's fair. I'll buy that. I will accept
Space
your
Jesus.
I will accept your
Space Jesus'
sir.
Son is all behind him.
Space Jesus. Not fond of Space Jesus, but this is before Space Jesus, so I'm okay with it. And so then we have Little Green Men, which breaks the
literally
rules.
Literally my third favorite.
Really?
Yes.
See, Little Green Men is funny, because it's all about, they get taken back to the
50s. That's why it's my favorite.
And the 50s are universally hilarious, because, you know, everyone in the 50s was really dumb.
Well, 47, because...
Oh, I guess it was 47.
Because the episode was saying, or Star Trek is saying, Roswell was totally the Ferengi. Mm-hmm. That's what happened.
The problem is that it breaks the rule and makes it so that time travel is repeatable. Because the thing they do can be done again. It's not a freak accident. I mean, it was an accident, but it's an accident they can repeat.
Yes, that's true.
And you would think that someone with the business sense of Quark would realize this was a profitable venture. But for some reason, we never saw it again.
Uh-huh.
So tell me about what you liked about this episode.
Because it was a Ferengi episode.
Mm-hmm.
And I love Ferengi episodes.
Hmm.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah, right.
Especially with the Ferengi kind of being a little more at home now.
Yeah.
You know, interacting with the other side of humanity, which is their greedy political conquest ways, where they're so tied to economics, right? You know, and it's made so abundantly clear to me that they could, in fact, function this environment because of the whole tobacco thing, right?
Right,
because there's one moment in there when they're on Earth, and they're talking about Earth and whatnot, and Nog says, yeah, they're, like, using, like, tobacco and stuff, which is, like, poisonous for them. And Quark says, man, we're going to make a killing here, because they're poisoning themselves. They'll buy poison.
Okay, here's what I don't understand about that, is that Quark's all surprised, but, like, they have addictive drugs in the 24th century. Quark knows about them. I don't understand why that surprised him.
Well, because his image of humanity is one of being upstanding. I mean, Quark isn't going to go look at Earth history.
Like, he was surprised by the concept of people buying destructive drugs. Like, that was the impression I got.
I could see how that would be I interpreted it the other way, is how I saw it, was that he was seeing that humanity in this stage will buy poisonous things for them. I could see how it could be interpreted the other way, though. And that might actually how it was supposed to be delivered, I suppose, maybe.
Yeah.
And but
we also had that we also had another point where they, another point in the, is gold valuable or not?
Yes.
Because Quark wants their gold.
Yeah, gold's good.
And it's like, wait, what? Is gold valuable? Is it not valuable? Make up your mind! So then after that we have Ascension, which is kind of a time travel episode. Not really, I guess, because it's more like the prophets grab the dude from the past and...
Like, you have to remind me of this episode.
Okay, this is an episode where, like, some guy flies out of the wormhole in a Bajoran light ship.
Oh, yeah, the wooden spaceships.
Yeah, those ones. he flies out of the wormhole in one of these things, and he's all like, hey guys, I'm the emissary. And it turns out that he also meets all of the prophecy requirements to be the emissary.
Yes, okay, I remember this episode.
And he did it first, and this is before Sisko wanted to be the emissary. So he's like, okay, you're the emissary now. And he's like, all right, my first order, everyone back to caste system. And the Bajoran's like, okay, you're the emissary. I guess we can go back to caste system now. And of course, eventually Sisko is like, no, man, I'm going to be the emissary because you a jerk.
Yeah.
And it's only kind of a time...
Well, see, the caste system was actively being destructive to Bajoran society, especially at a time where they were still recovering from the occupation.
Exactly.
At this point. So Cardassians just left, and suddenly, let's go ahead and go back to our Djaras.
Yeah.
For that. Which, I mean, they had the caste system... If I remember the episode right, they actually had the caste system just up to where Cardassia came along, right?
Yeah, I think that was the
And then they switched out of that because it wasn't working as far as... One, because Cardassia was all up in their grill.
Exactly.
And then they're also trying to fight a resistance at the same time, and the Djara was actively hampering that. So they had to culturally shift in order to fight.
Exactly.
That's why I understood what was going on.
Yeah, that was my... I agree. I think that is what happened.
Yeah, so I mean...
Which is an interesting thing, is that, like, it is the Cardassian occupation that led to the end of the caste system.
Yeah.
Sort of raises the question of if they would have gotten away from it on their own. But, I don't know, maybe or maybe not.
Well, yeah, I mean, and it seemed a little odd that it would be so destructive for their society. I mean, we're talking, like, how long does a Bajoran live?
No, I think we can assume they live about the same lifespan as a human.
Like 80 years. So we're talking a generational difference, right? Because the occupation was for 70 years?
50 years.
50 years? But, so not even a generation. Like, yeah. Half a generation,
although,
right?
To be fair, despite the numbers, when they actually say numbers, it's like 15 million killed during the occupation. I think it's clearly supposed to be way more than that. So even though the generational 15
million
gap,
recorded.
Yeah, I think I would... I
mean, just as that World War II is, you know, like, we recorded this many deaths, but there are probably more as well.
Yeah, but it's like, we're talking... I assumed it was supposed to be, like, it should have been 50... Maybe, it should have been in the billions, personally. I think if we're talking about the population of an entire planet, unless Bajor is just really lightly populated, I always got the impression it was supposed to be much higher than that. And
well, they've been around longer than like we have, like 10,000 years longer.
Yeah, so I always got the implication that it was supposed to be way more than that. And so even though the generational gap would have been much smaller because so many people from the older generation would have been killed, so like you would have this big culture break. Where, like, you know, where the older generation had been killed before being able to pass on their knowledge and culture to the younger generation.
So the younger generation, then, you're saying, is they didn't have any sort of basis then for their culture, and they kind of had to piece it together
as
they were trying to fight the Cardassians.
And so they didn't really... I think that's why the caste system was so quickly discarded, and why no one in Bajor has even mentioned the caste system until now. Because if you look at every other culture on Earth, they never shrug off the caste system that quickly. Like, even... even, like, in India right now, there is still violence against people whose, like, great-grandparents were members of the Untouchables. Because of the caste system.
Really?
Yeah, really. Dang. Totally still a thing.
It's a hell of a grudge.
And in Japan, it was the same thing up basically until the end of World War II. Japan, even though technically the samurai caste system had been abolished, the people who were samurai were still, for the most part, the ones who were in charge of everything. And the people who had been merchants were mostly still merchants, and it was the same caste system. And then everything got reorganized because of this massive American occupation at the end of World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, there's a whole list of things that went into that, but it was a strong exterior force which reorganized their society, and that's the same thing with the occupation, I feel.
Okay. All right.
So, but anyway, what we were talking about ascension.
Yes.
So that's only kind of a time travel episode, but this guy did technically come from the past.
It wasn't like a sudden shift, because he was gone for 300 years or so in actuality, yeah. And then the prophets just spit him out.
Right. Which, you know, I think, right. When they actually went to talk to the prophets, we found out that was totally an accident.
Yeah. Well, because they had no concept of,
yeah, the prophets don't experience time the same way humans do. So anyway, then after that we have Trials and Tribulations, which is awesome for a lot of reasons. You can't not love Trials and Tribulations. Mm. The human body is physically incapable of not loving Trials and Tribulations. All right, why don't you like Trials and Tribulations, Bob?
Just don't. Didn't do it for me. I mean, I thought it was an okay, kind of cool concept, but it was really... It really just kind of seemed like a way for Paramount to say, yeah, there was this other series we did. You want to watch that and buy some DVDs of it? It's really kind of, or well, VHS, I suppose. DVD wasn't too popular then, in 97?
Something like that. I mean, I really liked it as a tribute, because it was, the 40th anniversary episode. And I thought it was a really cool way to, like, pay tribute to the original series. And I have to say, the few times they used actual footage from the Trouble with Tribbles episode, they did a really good job of splicing the DS9 cast into the footage.
Oh yeah, it was really well done. I thought it was really well done. I don't dispute that at all. I thought they did a really good job of getting those actors into those scenes and having them actually interact,
mm-hmm,
with those characters. Like, they had one exchange with O'Brien and Kirk.
Yeah, where O'Brien laughs. They're all lined up.
Yeah, I thought that was like a fantastic exchange, and the fact that they were able to do that and have that edited that way, I thought it was really well done. But I just didn't really like the episode, because I felt like the same way you feel about like Assignment Earth with Gary Seven, how Kirk and Spock, are like guest star characters. Yeah. That's kind of how I felt about Trials and Tribulations, because it was definitely supposed to be, hey, we're back hanging out with the NCC-1701, the original, mind you, and then there's the DS9 guys. That's how I felt it was, is that now you have these guys interacting in this TOS environment, and that the TOS environment, along with Kirk and Spock, are the forerunners in this episode, is how it's supposed to be. The story didn't quite play out that way, obviously, because we had more screen time for them, mm-hmm, but I felt the atmosphere was trying to tell me that I should be paying far more attention to the TOS side of things. And I think it's probably mostly a color and like set thing, because like TOS was very bright, bold stuff, right? Their uniforms, the decor, everything. Whereas like DS9 is far more subdued, right?
Right.
So maybe it was that play on that, but I really felt that the TOS elements were like trying to jump out and slap me in the face.
Yeah. Okay. I don't agree, but I can see where you're coming from on that. The only thing about Trials and Tribulations I didn't really care for was that it introduced the Orb of Time. Which is apparently a thing that just lets you time travel whenever you want.
Just go back. Just do it.
And it seems sort of like, well, and it seems like a very valuable tool that, again, you would think the Federation would think about using during the Dominion War when everything is getting stomped. Everything they cared about.
Well, it's a Bajoran, like, artifact is what it is, right?
Yeah.
Because it's from the Prophets or so. Because, I mean, Starfleet's got a big deal about the Prime Directive, right?
Yeah, but I mean, like, can you imagine Section 31 passing that up? We're talking about the people who, like, decided to preemptively genocide the Founders.
I don't think that they would
really flinch at the idea of stealing a Bajoran cultural artifact and using it to go back in time and fix mistakes that the Federation made during the war.
Man, now I'm on this whole track of why Section 31 didn't do that.
Well, they didn't do it because they didn't think about it. I mean, it's a, you know.
Or they didn't have the opportunity to.
I suppose. But, I mean, we're talking about
the That being said, when it gets back to Bajor.
I mean, you really think that the Bajorans could protect the orb from Section 31? I mean, I don't think so. I mean, I'm not convinced anyone could, but definitely not the Bajorans. I mean, they're not exactly full of, you know, they're not exactly brimming with prime security technology.
No,
not I mean,
really.
I suppose maybe the Prophets would. I don't know, maybe the Prophets would get mad, but the Prophets were perfectly okay with that Klingon guy using it to go back in time to, like, fix his little petty mistake.
Did they use the same actor for that?
You know, I think they might have. I think they definitely
look like an older version of him, that's for sure.
They might, I forget if they did or not. We'll Wikipedia that later.
Right.
So we're coming up on the end of Deep Space Nine here. We only have two other episodes. We have Children of Time, which is a time travel episode, kind of. It's the one where they go to a planet that has, like, some weird spin going on with its atmosphere that, like, when they find out that they've already crash-landed there and, like, as a result, created a colony in the past, which now is, like, saying, hey, guys, if
with,
you...
With, like, 5,000 strong population.
Yeah,
right?
So inbreeding...
In the 24th century?
Well, what?
well, I mean, they need 30 people to create a stable genetic pool.
Pulaski said that.
Pulaski did say that.
I have no idea what Pulaski based those numbers on.
That being said, I think the Defiant has a pretty large crew complement.
It has a crew complement of 45.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Oh, well, there we go.
And
I guess Law would.
It has a crew complement of 45, and only about 20% of them are women.
Mm.
So there you go. And, you know, one thing I do know about establishing a stable breeding population is that ideally you want more women than men.
Yep.
So, personally, I don't think that they could have established a stable breeding population, but that's, you know, that's neither here nor there.
Well, maybe they just got really lucky and, you know, the inbreeding just didn't happen for them.
Maybe. Maybe that's possible. Maybe they
didn't. At least the defects really didn't happen.
Maybe they weren't full of all the horrible recessive traits that come out when inbreeding happens.
Yep.
But, the part about that episode that's kind of weird is that Odo apparently decides to sacrifice the entire colony to save Kira. And I get that Odo likes Kira, because, you know, the whole dilemma is that if the Defiant crew doesn't choose to crash land again, the colony won't exist.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I get that Odo likes Kira, but I didn't think he liked her that much. I mean, that just seems kind of like, ugh. I mean, I don't know, man.
Remember, we're still dealing with, I think, Creeper Odo at this point, right?
Yeah, I guess. He hasn't told Kira how he feels. This is before their romance is fully formed.
Yep.
And it just seemed kind of... That just seemed a little extreme. and then we have... after that, there's Time's Orphan, which is the episode where Molly falls into an old time portal that someone left lying
around.
Yeah,
they just leave this time portal lying around, and then O'Brien's going on a picnic, and then Molly runs off and does some stuff, and oh man, then suddenly she's in the thing.
Yeah, and then they beam her back out, but, like, she's 18, and she's lived, like, 10 years by herself, and she's all savage and stuff.
Yep.
But then, like, magically, when she goes back through it, she finds her little girl version and sends her back into the regular time. And I remember thinking, you know, that just seems like a really obvious thing to have done. Like, it seems like, because it's like, see, it seems like whenever they activate it, they have, like, a chance of getting the wrong one. So, like, why don't they just activate it, send a robot through, and be like, this is totally the wrong time, guys. All right, let's try again. Because, you know, they established very early that things can go back and forth. It's not a one-way portal. It's just very unstable.
Right.
So you just send get a freaking periscope. Point your periscope through and be like, what's going on here, guys?
Just stick your hand through with a tricorder.
Yeah, be like, Molly, if you are here and 8 years old, please come through.
Recording the tricorder.
So yeah, that episode ignored a very obvious solution to the problem, I thought. Uh-huh. And for better or worse, that's the last real DS9 time travel episode. So, do you want to maybe come back next week? Because we still have Voyager, Enterprise, and the movies to get through.
Oh, my goodness.
And I feel like we need a break. Because we've been talking about time travel for a long time now.
What are we up to? Straight hour?
Hour 15
hour
minutes.
Hour 15? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, we don't have, like, the music breaks like we used to.
Yeah.
So, I think we're going to call it here for today. And next week, we will come back and talk about the I mean, we had some good time travel episodes so far from TNG and DS9.
Yeah, but now we're going to go into Voyager. It's all going to go downhill.
Exactly.
Is that Enterprise so, after that?
It's going to be so much more fun.
It's true.
All right, guys. We hope you enjoyed this. Tune in next week. At some time, I would give you a specific time, but we're not live anymore, so we can make this whenever we want.
We're still going to try to do it, I think, a regular schedule like we've been doing, and try to release it on the website on the Tuesday.
Yeah, which, speaking of which, get to work.
Yeah.
All right. All right, thank you guys. This is Oren and Bob signing off.